The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes Show.
They say it takes a big man to admit he's wrong, but I say it takes an even bigger man to admit he's never wrong.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you that bigger man, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome. It's the Eric Metaxas Show, Hour 2. I'm continuing my conversation with Jenna Ellis. She's with the Trump campaign. She is a lawyer, a constitutional lawyer. I met her when she was teaching constitutional law in Colorado, and now look at you now, Jenna. I mean, honestly, could you dream this up that you would not only be involved with the president of the United States, but you would be involved with a legal team that is looking into one of the greatest potential scandals in our history? And unfortunately, there is zero hyperbole that if this is half of what we think it is, it is just one of the ugliest scandals imaginable to disenfranchise voters across the country. It grieves me for my nation.
Absolutely. And, you know, Eric, if you look at the scope of what's happened since 2015 to Donald Trump through now, the scandals have only gotten worse. I mean, when I first was speaking for the campaign and was then part of the president's legal team for the impeachment hoax, I mean, that was such a ridiculous attempt to undermine a sitting U.S. president by manipulating the impeachment clause for political gain and political power. I mean, that started this year. We started in 2020 with having to fight that legal fight. And to me, I mean, that was something as a constitutional law attorney, that was something that was so grievous to our nation to have political operatives that the Democrats were trying to wield their power in the Constitution for nefarious purposes. And yet, who could have imagined that at the end of this year, we'd be bookending 2020 with the impeachment hoax, and then now this type of scandal where the Democrats are just trying to ignore this massive, massive manipulation of our election system and undermining election security. And they did so at the very beginning of this year, when they tried to use the pretext of the coronavirus to send out millions and millions of ballots that were unrequested. And so they have all of these different angles of allowing for fraud to come into our system. And it's really difficult, of course, to track down everything. And we are getting so many tips. I mean, I can't even tell you how many emails and messages on Facebook and everywhere else that I'm getting, you know, hourly at this point from people who are very concerned, who have relevant information. We're trying to funnel these as much as possible to our hotline, to our website. If you are listening to this, please don't reach out to me. Go to the hotline. That's where we have the reports for this at donaldjtrump.com. If you have any relevant information, please, please give it to us, because we are sifting through these reports and we are seeing how incredibly, how much of a disaster. I mean, I don't even have words for this, Eric. And I'm not a person who doesn't have words, but this is something that is so injurious to the entire premise of what our country was founded upon, that we the people get to select our nation's leaders, to undermine that. Yeah. And to not, and for the Democrats to not even care about this.
And look, Jenna, let's be honest. They've been, by the way, let me mention the hotline. You said people should go to donaldjtrump.com.
Yes. And then the hotline is also 888-630-1776.
888-630-1776. Jenna, the thing is that the Democrats, and this really does grieve me so deeply, because they once were an honorable party that had some differences. They have gone over to the dark side, not just to cultural Marxism and to being apologists for Antifa violence and BLM violence, But they have, for the last 4 years before this election, been doing everything they can to undermine the vote, the American voters' vote, and saying that he was elected in 2016. We don't care. We don't like him. We don't accept him. In other words, basically telling Americans who voted for him, which is to say most Americans, we're talking about, you know, the people who elected him, that's called the United States of America. For the last 4 years, they've been already saying, we don't care who won. We don't like him. We reject him. We'll do anything to take him down. Now we have another election where we take it to the next level, where they're willing to use fraud. And it's interesting because you were just saying how complicated it is. It's kind of like saying somebody cheated in the baseball game. That's really simple. It's one baseball game. You know, maybe you have a pitcher with an emery board that he is using to doctor the ball, or maybe you have somebody stealing signs. This is not like cheating in a baseball game. This is like cheating in the Olympics, where you have 10,000, 1,000 events happening all over, from fencing to whatever. And there's such widespread cheating, but it's about the medal count, who got the most medals. But to track it down, it's, you know, you mentioned dead people voting. You mentioned machines being rigged. We also have people who messed with the counting and said to the Republicans, get out of the room. We're going to do our counting. We don't want you to watch. All that stuff is suspect. You have in Pennsylvania, the votes that are supposed to be counted by the end or they're supposed to come in by the end of the voting day, 8 p.m., they let them come in. Wait. You've got 10 other ways to cheat that I haven't even mentioned. So this is really big stuff. And on that level, it is utterly systematic.
Well, yes. And that's, I think, a great analogy of the Olympics. And it's like you have to deploy then a whole team of investigators and, you know, and lawyers and everything to each event for to see exactly what happened and to put together the case and to see, you know, the investigation of exactly what's going on. But because this is so systematic, I mean, think about it this way when you're talking about the medal count analogy. I mean, this is how much the Democrats did not want Donald Trump to win. Because if they know that they have to deploy every single available event just to make sure to manipulate the outcome, and that's what we're seeing, then they know that the American people are so much behind this president. I mean, and you look at, you know, not just the pollsters, you don't look at the fake news, that, you know, the fictitious projections. If you look at on the ground, you look at the stats that we had in the data from the rallies of how many people showed up in support of this president. If you saw, you know, these ginormous boat parades and all of these car parades, you saw the data of how many registered Democrats who were still alive, you know, the registered Democrats who came in support of Donald Trump at his rallies, between 18 and 25%. That's why they need to have dead people voting, non-residents voting. There's allegations right now of Democrats in Georgia for the runoff between for the Senate race, and that will determine the majority of the Senate. They are encouraging people to move into the state just to vote. That is a felony. Representative Jody Heiss, I retweeted one of his tweets today saying, that's a felony, guys. You have to actually have legal residency. You can't just move in, vote, move out. It doesn't work like that. But that's what they're encouraging in this runoff. I mean, you have such a systematic, widespread, intentional abuse of our election system because they want to control the system and then ultimately dismantle it.
What is your sense of where things are going? In other words, do you believe the president will be able to win this fight if he actually was elected president and they skewed the counting? Do you think that between now and January or whenever it is, we will be able to get the truth out?
I genuinely really, really hope so. I mean, this is an uphill battle. You know, we need the proof. That's why we're completing these investigations before we're filing suit. But that's why not certifying a false count is really important, to say, hold on, we need to wait and let the facts and the truth come out. And I really hope that the judicial branch will step in. And I also hope that places like Pennsylvania, for example, when you see how utterly compromised their election results were on a wide variety of bases. It's not even just one legal challenge, it's multifold. And you see how just irredeemably compromised that is. Then you have to have the state legislature that's ultimately responsible for the manner of selecting their delegates. They could step in. Their judicial branch needs to step in. So we're fighting, but we also need the support of the government branches that are also responsible.
I'm afraid we're out of time. I just want to say Trump will be reelected. There are millions of people praying. Folks, keep praying.
Yes.
Jenna, God bless you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Eric.
Hey there, folks. Veterans Day. Have you heard of it? I believe it was yesterday. It was recently. It's an important day. And we kind of thought, wouldn't it be fun to talk to someone who's written a book that came out on Veterans Day having to do with a military hero. And so we were able to get our friend Robert Orlando. He's been on this program before. He's an author and filmmaker, and he has a brand new book out right now called The Tragedy of Patton. Robert Orlando, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Eric.
Listen, The Tragedy of Patton, very provocative title. So before we get into anything, I have to ask you, what is your thesis? Why did you title the book The Tragedy of Patton? And listen, there are some young people listening who have no idea who Patton is, okay? They've never heard of Lincoln, never heard of Washington. They were just born a few years ago. They're not responsible for that material, okay? So can you tell my audience who doesn't know who Patton is, who was George Patton?
You're saying when they were tearing the statues down, they didn't know their names? Sorry. Anyway.
The people who watch this show are against tearing the statues down. That's why they're watching this show.
just want to clarify. So yes, General Patton was the leading and most aggressive, most accomplished general of World War II. He was brought in late. He was controversial, but he wound up covering most of the ground that got in, invaded Italy, went to France, swept across France, and went into Germany at the end of the war. And then he was left to govern in Germany after the war. And he was very opposed to the Russian alliance we had at the time. And for that, he was a controversial figure. But also at the end of his life, December 9th, 1945, he was driving to go on a pheasant hunt and had an accident on the road. And with that accident, later wound up in the hospital and ultimately died 12 days later. Many believe he was actually assassinated. So this is the main.
If you don't mind my asking you, since you've written the book, this is only a few months after the end of the war. He thinks now he can retire. He can have some fun. Where was he when this accident occurred?
He was in Bavaria. So he was somewhere outside of Mannheim. And he was just a friend of his, a general friend of his said, "Would you like to go for a pheasant today?" Because everyone was depressed. He was depressed after the war because he couldn't sit still once the battle stopped. And he had been demoted so many times. He was in he was cornered at that time. So General Gay, who was a buddy of his for many years, said, "You want to go for a pheasant hunt?" And they did. And they wound up getting caught at a train stop where they had to let the train go by. And when they pulled out, they were a 2.5-ton truck, an armored vehicle crashed into them and severed part of his spine, and then he had to go to the hospital for another 12 days and died because he couldn't breathe anymore.
Well, technically. Yeah. Why? You didn't answer my question about why you titled the book The Tragedy of Patton.
So The Tragedy of Patton is because he was born in the pedigree of the military, and his whole life he was an insecure younger man, and he always found his meaning and his destiny in being a great general, one that could be compared with Caesar and with Alexander and everything. And at the end, he measured himself in his deathbed, whether he could ultimately fulfill his destiny and be in the pantheon of great generals. And the tragedy was ultimately he died in a car accident that led to a hospital visit. And then he was never sure at the end whether he ultimately fulfilled his destiny.
He would have been preferred to be decapitated with a saber held by a hussar on a horse, obviously. And he really did fail. What a pity. What a pity. I got to ask you.
The last shot with the last bullet right in his head. That was the way to die.
Right. So in other words, what you're telling us, Patton was a real screwball, but he accomplished some good things in his life. It doesn't sound to me like George S. Patton was coming from a biblical perspective. I hate to bring that up. I don't want to offend the atheists that watch my program. But the idea that he was thinking that way, that's kind of the classic way of, you know, I want worldly fame. I want glory. I want to be in the pantheon, you know, and then you die and then you go someplace and, you know, you're not going to care so much at that point. Which pantheon you're in or not in. But it's fascinating. Some of these military heroes that are larger than life, they really did have that sense of self, which almost seems necessary for them to have done what they did. So I don't mean to make light of him too much, because he was a great general. And his stand on our alliance with Russia, people never talk about that. And I wanted Robert to talk to you about that. To my mind, it was always a grotesque, if not evil, alliance, that we allied ourselves with Stalin, a man perhaps more wicked than Adolf Hitler himself, and we allowed him to take a half of Europe and to take his own people into some of the most dark bondage in the history, in modern history, the Soviet system. So Patton saw this. And as far as I know, he wanted after the war to march straight on to Moscow, and Truman and others would not allow him. Am I getting that right? Tell that story.
You know, people dismiss this because they tell the story in extremes that kind of dismisses the value of it. He wasn't looking to just start a war, although he spoke in extremes. He was a bit hyperbolic, like some other people I can mention today, but and brash, by the way.
Feel free to look at the camera, war. Mr. Filmmaker.
Yeah, late in the war,
please look at the camera. We like you. We you're telegenic. Please continue, because this is most people don't know this, so that's one of the reasons I'm excited for you to tell the story.
So late in the war, people don't understand that Patton understood that we did not go to World War II just to save the Western Europeans. We were also there to save the Eastern Europeans, because after the war, both of those West and Eastern European could become democracies potentially, which was the whole point. But he knew, Patton, even during the war, that Eastern European would not be saved unless we captured the capitals of Austria, Prague, on. And he knew that they were preventing him from going east because the Russians had been an ally in the war, and by not fighting, pushing the Russians back. So it usually gets dismissed as Patton wanted to start another war, but what he really wanted to do is push the Russians back to where they started on their own borders so that we can capture Eastern Europe.
But Robert, for people who are young and who don't understand this, because I know that they're out there, the Soviet Union was as wicked, as evil, as atheist, and allied with the demonic as any nation in modern history or in all of history. And the fact that we allied with them to defeat the Nazis, that is possible to understand. But the idea that we allowed them, against Patton's advice, we allowed them to take half of Europe, to subjugate the Poles and the Hungarians and all of the others in those nations to the horror of communism. My mother is one of those people. She was in East Germany. They took that. So people need to understand that when the war was over and we allowed this to happen, it was a tragedy. There were many, many, many millions of people who suffered horrors under the Soviet bloc system. What was it about Patton that, I guess, was he in an argument with Truman? How did it work that his argument was not able to prevail? Because it's pretty horrifying to think that we let that happen. We say, oh, we defeated Hitler, but what about Stalin?
There was a lot of antecedents, but think of the Third Army as 500,000 American soldiers on the borders of those main capitals of Poland, Prague, Austria. They were right on the borders, and it was the end of the war, so they had the full strength. Patton said he alone with his army could defeat the Soviet Union. And he said, if we do not push them back, and Churchill was on his corner, said, if we don't push them back to their original borders, they're going to wind up taking over even Western Europe, because they wanted Berlin, which was seen as the crown of Europe. So in the end, he was trying to prophetically, not just as a general, say to them, if we don't fight this war now and at least push them back where they're at their original borders, we're going to wind up fighting them for the next 50 years. He actually said 7 million men, but he was totally prescient in his predictions.
All right. He was that's your highfalutin way of saying he was dead right. Who were the voices pushing back? Was it Truman? And what was Truman's argument?
Well, Truman comes in very late after FDR dies in 1945. So most of it was Eisenhower, Bradley to some degree, because he was more of a tempered, cautious general.
Omar Bradley, Marshall. General Bradley.
Yes, yes. You have General Bradley.
I just have to point out before we go to a break.
Yeah.
Just before we go to break, I have to point out that General Omar Bradley, I just saw him on the other day. I was watching a Dean Martin celebrity roast, and Omar I'm not making this up. Omar Bradley was on there. If I had known he was the skunk that pushed back Patton on this, I would have turned off even the Dean Martin roast, which is my favorite program of all time. We'll be right back talking to Robert Orlando. The book is The Tragedy of Patton.
You got the notion. Rock the boat.
I don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
I don't tip the boat over.
Rock the boat.
I don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
Investors seeking steady cash flow, ready to diversify? NRIA has grown to be one of the nation's leading specialists and offers 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses targeted at 18 to 21%. That's right. You could receive steady 10% return monthly payments with bonuses. As their slogan says, they specialize in realty investing done right. You can even use your 401k or IRA to invest. NRIA's 15-year track record and $1.2 billion in new construction development backs you. Learn how you can invest in this hard asset real estate cash flow fund today and receive 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses. This is something savvy investors should research and consider. Call now 800-700-5483. That's 800-700-5483 or visit NRIA.net.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with My Pillow. You may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric. Okay. Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are. And I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to MyPillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you.
Well, my daddy left home when I was three, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me. Just this old guitar and an empty bottle.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking with Robert Orlando, who's been on this program before. He is a documentary filmmaker. He's a filmmaker and an author. The new book out is called The Tragedy of Patton. It came out on Veterans Day. We're talking about that. But let me ask again, if you could explain, Robert, why did you title it The Tragedy of Patton? Is it because he died the way he did, because he died right after the war? Is it because he failed to convince Bradley and Eisenhower and the others that we needed to go on to push back against the Soviets? Is it all those things, or is there more?
No, it's pretty much the idea that in the whole trajectory of his life, he had imagined since he was a young boy who had come from a pedigree of military family, that he imagined himself being one of the greatest generals of all times in the pantheon of generals. And because he died in an accident at the end, I thought it raised a great question, like, did he fulfill his ultimate destiny and the destiny that he was playing for the United States. And in the end, that's what the book's about, like playing out through his mind and through his own self-understanding. Was he accomplished what he was set out to do?
I always have to ask authors this. What led you to write this book? Writing a book is no mean undertaking. Why did you choose to write about George Patton?
Yeah, Patton's one of my lifelong passions, I have to say. Some things are may last a year or two or interest at the time or they related to events. But World War II, to me, is the legacy of the United States. It's still our Iliad, if you will, or Aeneid, if you're Roman. But it still tells the story of all the larger structures of dramatically and value-based how we live like we do and why we do what we do. So when I went with my 8-year-old son to Normandy some years ago, I traveled to the beaches of Normandy and I was on Omaha Beach and it was a bunch of French people tanning basically. And I'm looking out at the English Channel and my son's like this big and I'm realizing my son will never know what happened here. He'll never see the Armada. He'll never see the planes overhead. And the brutality and the sacrifice that came from the United States. And we went to the memorial after that, and they were just lined and lined and lined with little white graves, little white crosses on graves. And you see names like Joe from New Hope, you name the town, a small town. But it was just a reminder to me that 18 and 19-year-old boys came to this place, a foreign country, to fight for their freedom. And I think given the last decades that I've lived in, people would never understand that again. And I was afraid the legacy would be lost. And I said, I want to do something to tell the story. And I think Patton, with all his imperfections, embodies the whole idea of America reaching out and being willing to sacrifice and die for American freedom.
I never saw the film with George C. Scott. He didn't play MacArthur. He played Patton. Every now and again, mm-hmm. I get confused. I just assume that the film Patton with George C. Scott that came out roughly around 1970 or the 69 or something like that, that was in a way, a kind of mocking him. Am I wrong in that? What is your take on that famous film?
Well, that film was based on two of Bradley's books, and Bradley was a bit envious of Patton. He was known as the Doughboy General, which meant he was a good general. He was a great general, and Eisenhower called him number one. But he was more of a blue-collar, hardworking, identified with the guys, and saw Patton more as an elitist and someone above him, who condescending at times, things like that. But also, it was written during 1970, and it was during the Vietnam War. So they wanted to make Patton to be more of a renegade to identify with the times. So he was skewed a bit toward George C. Scott performance. At the same time, it covered a lot of the same material. So it's kind of half fair, half a bit extreme. He wasn't as kooky and crazy as you think watching that film, but he was a renegade. There's no doubt. He did what he wanted to do.
Well, it's just interesting to me because when you bring up the issue of him lobbying for the U.S. to continue on and to not allow the Soviet Union to take Eastern Europe, that is just something for the rest of my life, I see that as a monstrous tragedy of history. And so I still don't understand why would Eisenhower and Omar Bradley, argue against that? It seemed not only the noble thing to do, but the wise thing to do, because as you said, we would spend years and years in a Cold War. What was their argument? What in the world could their argument have been? It seems simply like retreat. It seems like surrender to evil forces.
No, you're asking a great question, because ultimately it's really the puppet masters of the time, not the generals take the orders from the top. So you have Stalin, you have Churchill, and you have FDR organizing at Yalta, Casablanca, Tehran. And really what they're doing is they're trying to appease Stalin through the whole thing. Part of the problem is, to be frank, is the English boys are dying off. They've been fighting since 1939. They're out of men. They have no leverage with them. And I think there's a lot of argument to be made that FDR is a bit He has a bit of a favorite in the communists because he didn't like the
but,
British
colonialism. But FDR dies before these decisions are made. I mean, the war ends, April, May.
He's in on the three big. He's on the three. He's Tehran, Casablanca, and Yalta are the big.
I know that. Yalta, when did Yalta happen?
45.
Okay, so, and FDR dies when? Because 45. now I'm getting...
He dies in 45. I think it's May 45 he dies,
Okay.
So he's at the end of the war. Truman steps in to end, to take over at the end of the war.
Sorry, we have to go to a break. I lost track of the time. We'll be right back.
There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sand and hills and rain.
Folks, I'm talking to Robert Orlando, filmmaker and author. His new book is called The Tragedy of Patton. We're talking about General George Patton. Robert, I wouldn't want to go back to what you were talking about in Yalta, the tragedy that when you have Stalin meeting, talk about making a devil's bargain, Stalin meeting with Churchill and with Roosevelt, and they signed away Eastern Europe. They gave it into the hands of a bloodthirsty monster, certainly the equal in evil of Adolf Hitler. They make that devil's bargain. And then, of course, we know that Patton was against this. Did Patton have any allies with him on this? Was there anybody else pushing back? Because it just seems to me like such a sick thing that we, the United States of America, we talk about freedom. We were willing to do that. So we won. We beat Hitler. But my goodness, what about all the people behind the Iron Curtain?
There's a moment in the film I did, Silence Patton, which is a film that was born out of my work on the book. Not completely. The book's not only about what the film covers, but there's a moment in Prague where Patton is literally on the border. And he's waiting for the call from Eisenhower. And he has, again, you have to realize the Third Army was probably the greatest army in the world has ever seen. It was the most trained, the most vicious. They had been through the whole war. And he's standing on the borders and he's begging Eisenhower to let him go in and take the capital of Prague because he understands if he gets there first, the Russians won't. At the time, the Germans are occupying and there's the rebels are calling him on the phone saying, could we start an uprising and you come in once we start it? And he calls Eisenhower, and Eisenhower says, stand down. This is basically the Russians. This is for the Russians. We've agreed in advance, given the trilateral agreements. And he begs him like that. And Churchill calls FDR and says, you've got to let Patton go as far east as he can. If not, we'll be fighting the Russians soon. And the Czechoslovakians keep calling in to Patton, and he can't take the calls. And eventually they divert the calls to Stalin to take care of the problem. So what does Stalin do? He comes in, he kills the Germans, he kills the rebels, he just wipes the whole city out. And from then it was just a horror show. And like that, it happened in Austria and everywhere else. I mean, part of the reason, if I could make a case on the other side, one is we have the Pacific battle coming. So they also are seeing it like we have got to move from the European theater to the Pacific theater. And number two is the Russians, for reasons that you wouldn't respect, were careless and didn't care about how many bodies they threw at war, were fighting at a level of, they were losing 10 million, 12 million. We were losing hundreds of thousands. So they had to give something back to Stalin, but they did not see that he was playing chess where they thought he was playing checkers, because in his mind, the whole point was to leverage everything during the war to take over the whole world. That was the misstep.
Okay, so this is a black mark in the book of Ike. This is a black mark in the book of Omar Bradley. It's a shameful thing. I don't want anyone to miss this. What a dirty world we live in. What a broken, sinful world we live in. We talk about beating Hitler, but we made a bargain with one of the most evil men in the history of the world. And he took advantage of us. He took advantage of his own people. It's just something that people don't talk about a lot. So I'm glad that we're able to talk about it on this program. I thank the Lord for Ronald Reagan, for Margaret Thatcher, for Pope John Paul II, who stood up to the Soviets and who oversaw the dismantling of what was genuinely an evil empire. But it's just important people know this history, which is why I love talking to folks like you about books like this. Now, I know the book is The Tragedy of Patton. What was the film that you mentioned?
The film that was born out of the same subject matter was called Silence Patton, because it wasn't the premise of the book. The film was, would they silenced his guns after he slapped a soldier in Sicily. They silenced him on the battlefield when they pulled him from Normandy and delayed and caused so many casualties by not letting him fight on the Italian front and Normandy. Ultimately, did they silence him for good at the end of the war when was he assassinated? So I played around with that idea because he was speaking as it's so funny because it's related to the modern circumstance with Trump in a way, because you have a brash character who gets in trouble for what he says, but it doesn't mean he's not right what he's saying. But at the end of the war, he warned. He said, "We have the whole army here. If we take the whole army here, we're going to have to all come back and fight a Cold War basically for 40 years." And if you compare Hitler and Stalin, there's no comparison, because Hitler was 39 to 45, and that was it. He was gone. But with Stalin, he was just genocide for 40, 50 years. And then you have Mao, and it goes on and on.
I was
going to
say, Hitler only killed about 12 million. Stalin killed many, many, many more. It is such a nightmare. But the film is Silence Patton. Where can we find that, yeah, Robert?
On www.silencepatton.com. It's on the website. You can get it. So it actually got picked up by Sony Pictures in 2018. It was the only documentary they picked up. But that tells the story of how he was trying to prophetically warn the Americans that if they didn't end the World War II properly, they'd wind up in the Cold War. And no one listened to him because they thought he was just a rabble rouser and holding on to power. And someone just had he had no control over his words. But the truth was, he was looking at the world saying, the Germans are defeated. We have to keep them intact. Just like the bathification of Iraq when Colin Powell went in. He was like, if you don't have anyone to run the country, who's going to fight the Soviets when we leave? So he saw the whole thing. Ultimately, he was fired, demoted. Some people believe killed. And at the end, it all came true, because once the airlift of Berlin started 2 years later, and they had to reinstall German leaders, they took him out of the Nuremberg trials to lead Germany. Everything he said that he predicted was true. It's a real stain on Eastern Europe, by the way. And I've traveled on the Divine Plan and on this film. You speak to Polish people, Ukrainians, you speak to them about this. They feel like they were left behind, abandoned by the Americans.
Guess what? They were left behind. And it is, as I said, a black mark in the United States history book. It's a black mark on Eisenhower, certainly on anyone who was part of this. You could argue really that he is a Trumpian kind of figure, or that Trump is a Patton-like figure. I know that Patton is one of Trump's heroes. It's interesting to me, really, to think that sometimes it takes a bit of a maniac to see what needs doing and to be willing to do it. Patton certainly was that. And it is genuinely tragic that it didn't go the way he'd hoped that it would. We'll be right back. Final segment. I'm talking to the author of The Tragedy of Patton, Robert Orlando. Don't go away.
Our love is alive, and so we begin. Foolishly laying our hearts on the table, stumbling in.
Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Robert Orlando. The book is The Tragedy of Patton, brand new book on General George Patton. Robert, I have to ask you, I feel like since we mentioned the Trump parallel, I see something similar with China. We have had presidents, Republicans and Democrats, both appease China, be unwilling to confront them. Often it's greed that has done that. They think, hey, we're going to make tons of money. There's over a billion people there. We'll make a lot of money. Maybe they'll drift toward free market. Maybe the free market will help them to drift toward freedom itself. Didn't happen. Sometimes only a few people see what battles need to be fought and have the will and the courage to fight those battles. I think that's the case with Trump and China. He sees what is at stake for the future of the whole world. This is not a small thing. We're not talking about Luxembourg. We're not talking about even Afghanistan. We're talking about a giant, a communist-led dictatorship that is wicked to its own people. Do you see any parallels there? You don't have to agree with me. I'm just curious.
I really do. And as a matter of fact, over the last few days, knowing we would speak, I've been thinking with the changing news, like, my goodness, is this playing out? Let me take a step back. I could not have done my work, book or film, without Victor Davis Hanson. I got to just say that because I said to him, I won't do this project unless you're on it with me, because he's one of the few people who sees in the broadest sense of classical trends and tragedy and anti-heroes. And so the anti-hero theme is at play with Patton more than, and with Trump. And I'll make the point in a second. But the anti-hero is someone who's the gunslinger. Like, they're not, so they say the wrong words and they're not the best people in the room around genteel, educated people. But right. At the same time, they're the ones who they'll clear it. They'll get the villagers back in their homes and they'll make sure there's no bad guys around.
But don't you find it funny that Omar Bradley thinks he's the working class guy and Patton is the patrician, and yet Patton, kind of like Trump, who went to Wharton and is the billionaire, identifies with the working class. It's an interesting thing to observe those parallels.
Well, they were, I mean, Patton is a Renaissance man. He's I'd love to do a whole other show, literally just breaking down the man. He's a freak of nature. He does belong in the pantheon, by the way. But with Trump, I think it's more, it doesn't matter how you say it. It's what you do. And right now, what's going on now with the media about to start to cover over, you know, these voting elect. I hear Patton in my mind. He'd be the first one on the mic on TV going, we're not shutting anything down. This is America. We're of the Anglo tradition. We need to vote first or investigate first. The same way that media, that malaise kind of covers over things now. And we're moving on. We're of a higher order. To me, those are the seeds. It sounds so extreme, Eric, I got to say. I'm in my 50s, so to say this, you know, I've been around a little while. But the malaise that comes over is always in the name of the higher good. It's always because we're going to come together. We're going to be of a higher order, not like those racist nationalists. It's the same
story. Yes, but
story
you understand, since we're basically out of time, Robert, let's call that what it is. Evil from the pit of hell. It is masquerading as civility. It is masquerading as a desire for unity. It is a lie. If it weren't, I would be happy. But it is a lie. They're trying to paper over the cracks. I am sorry we're out of time. Robert, we will have to have you back to talk more about Patton. You've got a lot more information, your treasure trove on this and other subjects. So we will have you back just to talk about Patton. I appreciate you. Folks, the book is The Tragedy of Patton. The film is Silence Patton. You can go to silencepatton.com. And Robert, again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric. I really appreciate it.